Welcome to American Graduate, Keeping Kids in School. I'm Heather Burgess. Also joining me is Frank Stacio. Frank is host of The State of Things on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. Along with our panel and studio audience, we look forward to bringing you a dynamic conversation on the state of dropout prevention in North Carolina.
Although the numbers on dropouts in our state show some improvement, many educational and community leaders are still concerned and say more needs to be done to address socioeconomic disparities.
Here to talk about ongoing efforts to lower dropout rates across the state in the public schools is North Carolina's Superintendent of Public Instruction, June Atkinson. Also joining us on the panel to talk strategies and social realities for potential dropouts is Joel Rausch, Senior Research Scholar and Policy Liaison in the Center of Child and Family Studies at Duke University.
Todd Finn is principal at New Hanover High School in Wilmington, and he's here to talk about his continued success with welcoming dropouts back to school. And Carolyn Tyson is associate professor of sociology at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Her research centers on how school cultures can create barriers for students of different races when it comes to achievement and the perception of academic success. She's the author of Integration Interrupted, Tracking Black Students and Acting White After Brown. Welcome to our program.
Let's begin with you, Superintendent Atkinson. You have said in the past that raising the graduation rate is your most important mission. Can you tell us a little bit about the overall scope of this problem in our state and how many students in North Carolina are dropping out each year?
This past year, North Carolina recorded the lowest dropout rate we've ever had in our history. And at the same time, we recorded the highest graduation rate that we've ever had in our history. Of course, that is great news, but North Carolina cannot rest until we make sure that our graduation rate is above 90%. And unfortunately, this past year, approximately 16,000 students left our public schools. Our graduation rate was about 78%.
Joel Rausch, when we talk about dropouts, certainly we know the correlation between staying in school, getting a job, economic success, and all of that. Why do students drop out?
Well, students drop out for a number of different reasons. Some students drop out early when they turn 16, sometimes in the 8th, 9th grade. Others drop out in between 11th and 12th grade. The reasons why kids drop out are different at different times. Early in their career, students who are two and a half years behind their age cohort, that means they've been retained once or twice, have a high percentage dropping out. When kids get closer to graduation, there are a greater variety of reasons. But usually, if we can get that student, when they get close to graduation, to be linked up with a mentor or see some clear career or educational path, they're more likely to stay in school.
Now, Carolyn, I know your research has focused on how the physical and learning environments in schools can really create an unwelcome environment for minority students, in particular African-American males. Can you talk a little bit about how the school systems are structured and why this is discouraging some young black males to forgo their education?
Well, what I've seen in schools, and I've looked at elementary, middle, and high school, but my focus has been in elementary school classrooms quite a bit. And what I see happening there is how kids begin to get disengaged. So when they start school, African-American students are very much engaged and very much achievement-oriented. And what I saw happening over time is those kids who were performing poorly in school were actually the ones who were becoming more frustrated and more likely to say that this was a place they didn't want to come back to. And this is just third and fourth graders saying this. So you can imagine if this continues over time, by high school, as Joel mentioned, those are the kids who are going to be most likely to want to leave this place, which for some kids can be a very punishing place. And so the idea that kids aren't invested in achievement and education, I don't find support for in my research. Now, my research, probably unlike Joel's, is more qualitative. So I spend months and years in school following classrooms of students over time. So I see how this unfolds. And I also interview those students and talk to them about their attitudes toward achievement in school.
Todd Finn, you are working at the high school level, so you've seen these kids after they've been through elementary and after they may have talked with Carolyn. What do you do? You're focusing on individual students. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing at New Hanover.
Well, initially what we have to realize is the kids want to feel safe. They want to feel respected. They want to feel challenged, and they want to feel successful. If you can negotiate the obstacles to allow them to feel those four things, we always tell our kids, it doesn't matter who buys your lunch. It doesn't matter how you walk through that lunch line. You can be very successful here. So we want to be able to kind of blow up some of the misconceptions about maybe where our kids come from. And we don't want that to dictate whether or not they'll be successful in school. So we decided at New Hanover High School that we were going to completely reinvent the high school experience for our kids so they could come to school, they could feel safe, they could feel respected, they could feel like they can find an adult to talk to, and that it's not about bells, it's not about whistles, it's about finding a way for each individual child to be successful. They all don't start from the same starting point.
Well, what does that mean on a day-to-day basis? How did things change for you when you took over the school? You talked about finding somebody there, an adult who cares. What does that look like for a student walking in?
Well, coming in from a small, very rural Bladen County to Wilmington, it was a different team. And trust me, it's not about the principal. It's about everyone on that team, from the folks that work in that cafeteria to the people in that front office. But initially, we made a commitment, and that commitment was going to be that we were going to create a better place for kids to go to school. If you walk into our high school, it's no better than anyone else, other than the fact that it's just very, very different. Heather spent the day with us at school. You don't hear a bell ring in our school. They don't ring bells. Our kids take that responsibility on themselves to leave class and to get to class on time. You don't hear my voice on the intercom other than for the Pledge of Allegiance. You hear my broadcast crew, which are the students who do the announcements. They also release each other as well. It's a very kid-friendly place to be. As a matter of fact, they even DJ their own lunches down in the lunch hall. It gets them in there. To be honest with you, once I have you and once I get you to want to be in school, well, now we can teach you something.
Talked about the importance of mentoring, bringing adults into the program, and we have a guest in the audience tonight who has some experience with mentoring, and I'd like to bring him up and his mentee as well, if we can. Greg Myers, the founder of the nonprofit mentoring program Blue Ribbon. It's based in Chapel Hill, and I know you have a student with you tonight, and maybe you can introduce her to the audience as well. Greg?
This is Sierra O'Brien. Sierra is a senior at Chapel Hill High School, and she's a participant in our Youth Leadership Institute program.
Tell us a little bit about the program.
Sure. Well, Blue Ribbon is run by the Chapel Hill Schools, and we have two main programs. We have a mentoring program that does exactly what was described, in that we identify kids in fourth grade who we think would benefit from having one extra adult or several extra adults in their lives. We work with those students from fourth grade all the way through high school and on into post-secondary enrollment. In 16 years, we've only ever had one student drop out of school. We've sent 100% of our graduates on to post-secondary education. And I know from knowing those students' lives that for some of them, what's keeping them in school is having that mentor who they will not give up on that mentor because that mentor has not given up on them.
Now, I know, Sierra, we would love to hear from you. What has made the difference with being mentored? What has made a big difference in your life?
I'm in the Youth Leadership Institute of Blue Ribbon, and being in that program it's made me want to stay in school because we give back to the community, and in giving back to the community, I would want to further my education because if I do that, I would be able to give back in an even greater way. It really makes a difference.
That's great. Well, thank you both for participating. It's a fascinating program. Did you have?
I would like to ask Greg, when you see these students come in, especially in that critical ninth grade year, kind of coming into adulthood and seeing that it sort of overwhelms in a lot of ways.
Well, we know how important transition periods are for young people, and that when you're moving from one level to the next, whether that be elementary, middle to high school, you can feel lost because you're moving into a bigger environment. And so in our program, our mentors work together with the parents so that both of those people will go together every year to the open house to introduce themselves to the teachers, to go to parent-teacher conferences. And the goal of that really is the same mission of making sure that there are adults in that school who are connected to that student, that they feel like, I know who this child is, I know someone's looking out for this child, and I'm not going to let this child down if they're in my classroom.
That was Greg Meyer, founder of Blue Ribbon Mentor Advocate, and one of his mentees, Sierra O'Brien. They were members of our studio audience at UNC TV earlier this month where we recorded a conversation on the dropout crisis in North Carolina. The program was co-hosted by Heather Burgess of UNC-TV. Our panel guests are Carolyn Tyson, an associate professor of sociology at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, Todd Finn, principal at New Hanover High School in Wilmington, Joel Rausch, senior research scholar at the Center for Child and Family Policy at Duke University, and State Superintendent June Atkinson. The conversation continues, and we'll hear from more of North Carolina students just ahead on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Today we're airing a conversation on North Carolina's dropout crisis. The American Graduate, Keeping Kids in School, was recorded earlier this month at UNC-TV. Heather Burgess and I co-hosted the discussion, which included State Superintendent June Atkinson, Joel Rausch of Duke University, Carolyn Tyson of UNC, and Todd Finn, the principal of New Hanover High School in Wilmington. Todd has had great success with keeping his students engaged in their education and encouraging kids who are considering dropping out to return to school. We had a chance to hear from some of his students.
I ain't prepared for this. I thought I was going to be gone, so I got in trouble. I wasn't keeping my head right. I wasn't keeping my head in the books. Man, I'm not going to pass, man. This ain't me. I can every time it'll be another dropout.
Because it's tough at some point. You just got to stick through it. And if you do what you got to do in the classroom, the majority of the teachers here will bear with you.
I remember you want to combine the like terms.
I don't agree with dropping out. So it's like, it's not the right thing to do, but I mean, and if you got a principal like Mr. Finn, right, so tell me, you shouldn't even have to think about that, because he's going to make sure you get out of here.
On my pop side, like, you know what I'm saying, nobody walked across the stage. My pops told me, and told me, my brother, and my cousins, and all of us, you know what I'm saying, break the curse, you know what I'm saying, break the family curse. See yourself graduate and stuff, not doing the stuff that my parents used to do. When I talked to Mr. Finn, when he pulled me in his office that day when I was walking in the hallway, I thought I was getting in trouble or something, but it's actually good. He told me good news that he's going to help me out. That day right there when he gave me that help, it encouraged me to do better. So that makes sure I keep my grades up, make sure I do good in school, do what I got to do, make myself better so I can graduate.
I kind of feel like I'm at home when I come to school, sort of. And I'm staying out of trouble here, so I like it. As long as I come to class and do what I got to do, it's going to pay off in the long run, which it will. So I just do what I got to do every day.
I feel good by myself because I believe I'm going to make it when I walk across that stage. And I'm hoping to make it and, you know what I'm saying, go to college, get my degree. And going across that stage, Mr. Finn, he really working with me, and I appreciate him for that. I'm so thankful for that.
You just always got to have somebody in your corner telling you that you can do it. You know, don't give up. He comes to talk to me every day to make sure I'm on track. He's going to make sure I'm out of here.
June Atkinson, that's a pretty impressive showing. What do we do in the state of North Carolina? Do we have to clone Todd Finn and put him in every building in the state? I mean, how do you scale this up? If it's truly as successful as it looks, what do you do as superintendent to make sure this is happening everywhere?
Well, I'm very impressed with Todd's work in the schools where he has been. And one important aspect that we need to recognize as educators is that it is critical that we help students develop dreams. And that sounds so simple, but we also need the business community, citizens and parents and others to help develop dreams. And they can be short-term dreams. And if you can get a student to dream about tomorrow, then you can go to a week and then you can go to a month. So that's a very important component. Another important component is to get help and assistance to ensure that every child in this state has a caring adult in his or her life. That is very critical. And we also have to make sure that as educators, that we look at what the research says about keeping students in school and that we use that research to make sure that we touch every child. We have to give our students options. I mean, the same type of curriculum, although we want the standards to be the same type of curriculum doesn't work for every student. So we have to figure out what they're interested in. And our research shows that the students who take career technical education, over 50% of those students say, I stayed in school because I had an opportunity to take career technical education. And while we have those data for career technical education, my intuition tells me that that's also true of students who are engaged in arts, who are engaged in JROTC, or any type of subject matter that really piques their interest.
Now, Carolyn, the students we just heard spoke about breaking the cycle, breaking the curse. Did you see this in your research? Did you hear from young people talking about that? Can you talk about that?
Interestingly, I heard from parents talking about that. So when I interviewed parents of third and fourth graders, they talked about telling their children those same things, don't be like us. And again, I just want to emphasize this point. These are the very kids that we tend to think these are kids who are disengaged, who don't value education, and that's not true. When they find someone who cares about them, you actually see how invested they are in that. And they themselves and their parents want to break that cycle, but unfortunately, all of them don't always know how to do that. And so now you have a principal who's saying, I'm going to show you how to do that, and I'm going to be there. And that makes a difference. You know, so I think it's about changing the way we think about what these young kids need and what they want, because we already think we know the answer and they're built on stereotypes. And until we move away from that, we're not going to be able to have people like Principal Finn here make a difference, because you won't even think it's possible. And so the fact that he thinks it's possible to turn that around, I think, is the first step.
Are these barriers just barriers in the way we see or the way we think about education, Joel? Are there other barriers that make it difficult for us to make the transition? If we all agreed that this is exactly what every school principal should do and what every school should be like, could we do it tomorrow? Is there anything else that keeps us from doing this?
Well, we know what to do, but I think it's difficult to do it. So, for instance, we know that having a caring adult in every child's life is important, but how we get that caring adult there is another question. Now, we could clone Principal Finn. That would be great. We also know that the quality of a teacher in elementary school, in middle school, can make a huge difference. How do we attract and retain teachers who are going to establish those kinds of relationships is a challenge. The people who work in education, their salaries don't necessarily compete with other employers who want to buy those same skills. So I think it has to do with the workforce. It has to do with the kinds of resources we have for our schools. I also want to say that it's important that children are able to have some success. Not all children pick up reading and math the same way. We need programs, especially in the early grades, that prepare kids to be able to learn to do reading, to learn math. How kids do, whether they're able to learn to master the skills necessary to be able to read by third grade, is pretty important. Whether they're going to succeed later, and how they're going to view school and their success in school.
Now, we want to remind our audience, if you have questions, please make your way to the mic, and we will call on you. If you have any questions for our panel, we know you do. We'd love to hear from you. Now, Principal Finn, I did want to ask you, there was a time in your life when you were almost a dropout.
Oh, absolutely.
Which makes your story extraordinary. Talk a little bit about why and what encouraged you to stay.
Well, my kids, and those are my kids, I'm so proud of my kids on that mantra there. My story pales in comparison to what these kids go through. Trust me on that one. There's a lot of circumstances that they have that I did not have. However, back in 89, I was hard-headed, a little rambunctious, a little too energetic, and found myself on my own at 18 years old, just south of Boston, Massachusetts, thinking that it was a great idea, and I'll go ahead and finish up on my own. By March of that year, I was out of the house, and April, May came along, and June seemed like forever away. So when I talk to my kids or when I see my kids, I see a little bit of what I went through with them, probably times 10 from what they have to go through now. But I do think that it's a bit of a bond there, because I do understand some of the challenges of going to school without having had something to eat that morning, or having to work a third shift job and then have an Algebra 2 in the morning. So when I see a kid's head down, in my heart, I think I might understand why. And we have these conversations, and that's where we, I think, have connected. So, you know, I look at the past experiences that we all have. It makes up who we are now. And if we're having a little bit of success because of that, then it's all worthwhile to me.
Well, June Atkinson, I know that as we see these students, we look at the numbers. Our numbers in North Carolina, the rates have gone up over the past few years. What do you attribute that to? And what do you attribute how we're addressing the dropout crisis to those graduation rates?
Our research shows that transitional programs for the ninth grade class is a very critical component. And one of the reasons why we believe that that has worked is that the students see an adult who is willing to work with them more closely. They have adults who will help them maneuver a new setting as a school. And we know that in these transition programs that we have been able to address some needed improvements of students in mathematics and science and English language arts. So we allow them to catch up and to accelerate their learning. And we see that that has paid off in our increasing our graduation rates in the state.
One of the areas I want to talk about now are some of the disparities, both in graduation rates and in dropout rates. And some of these have been correlated with suspensions and expulsions from school. And we see great disparities in Wake County. For instance, 26% of the student population is African American, 80% of the long-term expulsions and suspensions are African-American men. And then we know the correlation between suspension, expulsion, the prison system, and, of course, economic opportunities that diminish geometrically. Carolyn, can you talk a little bit about what's happening with these disparities and if there's something structurally, if there's something in the school that accounts for these?
Yes. Some of the research shows that Black students and males in particular tend to be penalized for minor infractions that other students are not penalized in the same way for. So that, for example, a Black male may get suspended for something that another student may get in-school suspension for or some lesser punishment. So we do know that there is some ways in which the adults at schools are perceiving the very same infractions differently when they are committed by Black males in particular. And, you know, some of the research argues that what happens is that there is a perception of Black students and males in particular as being more violent. And so we need to get on this right away, and we need to stamp down on it in a way that's not, you don't perceive white students in the same way, for example, and then you don't respond in the same way. So again, it goes back to understanding how our perceptions and these larger perceptions in the broader society about Blacks and Black males in particular affect our day-to-day interactions in the schools with young Black men.
And Joel Rausch, I know you've done some research on this as well.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about suspension is that the suspension rates vary tremendously from schools to school, and we don't think that the kids are fundamentally different from school to school. Not only that, we have situations like in Durham, where Durham tried very hard to lower its suspension rate and did. So across the state, where we've been able to successfully implement positive behavior support, which is something the Department of Public Instruction has worked pretty hard on, we tend to get suspension rates to be lower. The other issue is that, unfortunately, today, a lot of disputes that in the past normally would be handled by a principal's office, we have school resource officers in our schools, and I think we're a little too quick to take some of those things that used to be handled by a principal and put them into the juvenile justice system, which is not, I think, appropriate for them, and I think the juvenile justice system isn't necessarily happy to have those kids in that system. But it's clear that when schools adopt the right type of policy changes, you can get that suspension rate down.
Something that we've done a little bit differently this year at New Hanover is this. I've got 1,600 kids, give or take a kid or two, and not one child's been written up this year. When we're coming up on Thanksgiving, I'm going to say that again. Not one child's been written up this year because we abolished write-ups. No more write-ups. And here's what we do. If there's an incident, an infraction that happens in the classroom, the teacher's been assigned one of four assistant principals or myself as someone that they'll call. And they'll call our extension, whether it be 228 or they'll get us on the radio. And we come up, no questions asked, we remove the child, and we talk to that student. We walk them down to a place that I call Principal's Academy, where we sit down and talk to them. Now understand this, it works out well for that teacher. There's no write-up to do. There's no two-week stack of referrals on a principal's desk to refer to later on. But there's two things that has to happen now. That teacher now has to process with that child and with me to find out what we're going to do to prevent this in the future. The second thing is this, they've got to make contact with the parent. That has to happen. Parents have that right to know what's going on in school. What I found is this, because I evaluate those teachers, they don't call me quite as much anymore. And so they try to work those problems out. So some of those things that we pointed out may have been, some of those folks that may have been targeted, if you will, I don't see that as much anymore because six times up there in the same week, now we have an issue. Mm-hmm. So we sit down and talk about that. And we've seen our suspension rate go down 68%, which is pretty incredible. So, and that's as of today. So it's working out very well for us.
Well, I know that we have an audience member who would like to ask the panel a question. Go ahead, sir.
It's a pleasure to be with you on this occasion, and my name is Reverend Bernard Holliday with my wife, Shirley Holliday. What models are being developed out of the Race for the Top programs servicing the 100 counties to prevent high dropout rate? Thank you.
Well, number one, with Race to the Top, our goal is to remodel education in North Carolina so that every single student can graduate. And one of the areas where we are doing that remodeling is something that I call the Barney Fife principle. And that is nip it in the bud before it becomes a problem. We have, working with over 400 schools, we are using diagnostic software to identify when a student has a reading problem. And when a student has a reading problem is the time that you address that issue rather than waiting until the end of the year or at a grading period to address that issue. So one is we are trying to make sure that we figure out when the child is having a problem and address it then rather than just addressing it with an end of course test or an end of grade test. That's number one. Number two, we are building a technology system where we really can personalize education. And I call that going GPS. You know that a GPS requires you to have a destination. Our destination is career and college ready, and we want our students to be good citizens. And you know that with a GPS, you have to analyze the likes and dislikes of how you want to get somewhere. So the software will allow us, through conversations with students, to figure out that which is most important to them and what they like to learn. And then we all know that if we have a GPS, we sometimes have that annoying woman or man who says recalculating when we get off track. So the assessment system that we are building is to be that person who says recalculating when the student gets off track. And it could be a student gets off track because they come to school tardy. So we have to address why did they come to school tardy. So they are some of the efforts that we have underway. Another thing that we're doing with Race to the Top is that we want to work with teachers and principals across the state to take the pockets of excellence and take them to scale across the state. So that means we have to have a caring, competent teacher in every classroom. We have to have principals who are great leaders.
You're listening to a special broadcast of The State of Things. The American Graduate Keeping Kids in School was recorded before a studio audience at UNC-TV earlier this month. Our guests are North Carolina Superintendent of Public Instruction, June Atkinson, Carolyn Tyson, an Associate Professor of Sociology at UNC Chapel Hill, Joel Rausch, a Senior Research Scholar at Duke's Center for Child and Family Policy, and New Hanover High School Principal Todd Finn. Coming up, we'll talk more about what can be done to address the dropout problem in North Carolina. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Today we're airing a special broadcast of our program called The American Graduate, Keeping Kids in School. We recorded this conversation at UNC-TV with a panel of education experts. The discussion addresses the reasons students choose to drop out of school. We also explored what schools, state government, and local communities can do to encourage kids to see their education through to graduation day. Our guests are State Superintendent June Atkinson, New Hanover High School Principal Todd Finn, Joel Rausch of Duke University's Center for Child and Family Policy, and UNC sociologist Carolyn Tyson, who's the author of Integration Interrupted, Tracking Black Students and Acting White After Brown. We taped this show before a studio audience at UNC-TV, and my co-host Heather Burgess and I asked those present to participate in the conversation. One of the audience members had a question for our panel.
Hi, good evening. I'm Omi Shade Bernie Scott. I work with the YWCA of the Greater Triangle, and a lot of our education justice work we've been doing in the last few years has been associated with a few national campaigns. And we don't actually use the language dropout. We use the language pushout because we feel like there are systems in place that make it difficult for kids to stay in school, so they're actually pushed out of the school system as opposed to dropping out. Some of those are what you've talked about, school discipline. We've also talked about individual education plans and parents actually understanding what that means for their child, personal education plan, the presence of SROs and the policing in our schools, because we believe that public schools are a way for people to engage in a democratic society, to be fully in their rights as citizens and being able to have a good life. And so I guess my question back to, and I was actually thinking about Dr. Tyson and Principal Finn, what are some of the ways, maybe in the research you were doing, people are addressing push-out policies? Like, how are parents understanding what their children's rights are in the school system, their rights in terms of due process, their rights of understanding when a child is suspended, their rights to have access to an IEP or a PEP, and so in a much more comprehensive way, because what we're finding is that a lot of the kids who are being pushed out of school who are having incidents with truancy or being called disrespectful or aggressive are also the kids who probably need a very comprehensive IEP or a PEP before they're even at risk of failing, and they don't even know they have the right to have that. So I would love for you all to answer the question and anybody else on the panel, but and also just trying on the language of push out instead of drop out.
And just very quickly before you do, IEP is an independent education plan that's designed for that particular student if they qualify, once they've been tested. But yes, please go ahead.
One thing I will say is that I recently completed a study with some collaborators from UC Berkeley and NYU that was looking at law in schools. And one of the things we found among students, and particularly among black students, is this sense of resignation, that there is different punishment applied to black students compared to others, and that there's nothing they can do about it. And when you ask them on surveys whether they talk to their parents or when we ask them in interviews about that, many of them don't, because they just assume there's nothing you can do about it. So that is something to address. We did not talk to parents in that study, so we don't really know what parents are aware of, but we have the data from the survey of students suggests that students aren't aware of their rights in terms of the kinds of things the speaker was talking about, and they just leave it at that.
And Principal Finn, can you respond?
Absolutely. I love that. I'm going to steal that from you, by the way, push-outs. I really, really do. I completely agree with you, and I believe that the push-out is actually, it's a symptom. It's not the disease. We have to kind of look at that disease and find out what's going on with this particular child to get to that point where what's out there is better than what I have to offer at my school. And I take that very, very personally. If what's out there is better than what I have to offer, then I'm not doing my job either. When a child does not feel academically successful, we've got to own some of that. And again, we had report cards today, and I saw a number of 68s and 69s, and I was not very happy about that. So we've got a couple of meetings scheduled with some folks to talk about what was it over the course of this half of the semester. And what interventions happen along the way, is that the best we can do? The second part really is social success. Some of those expectations, we cannot lower our expectations. We try to raise those. So for all of our kids, so with those things in play, I do believe that we can continue to have success in our schools with those kids that might otherwise be pushed out.
Joel?
I understand that it's important to change that language to talk about dropouts. But there are also kids who we talk about who fade out, who become disengaged over time for a variety of reasons. And one of the early signs of this, is truancy. We know that the more kids come to school, the more they learn. And that in some studies, when you control for the amount of time kids come to school, you find that some of the other differences tend to go away. So we need to do a better job of identifying kids who are starting to miss school, find out why they're missing school, engaging with their families. One of the things I think you find with successful programs is there's no one-size-fits-all. We have to use the information that we're going to put in place with Race to the Top and find out more about what the particular issues different kids are facing. We also need to do a better job of talking to kids and interviewing them when they do drop out or when they're pushed out or when they fade out to find out what the issues were.
I don't know, Carolyn, I wanted to ask you because you've written about a phenomenon called acting white. What does this phrase refer to in the context of academics for African-American students?
So that particular work was looking at what some black students have described as other black students accusing them of acting white when they are high-achieving students. Now, one of the things that my work shows is that this, in fact, is not as prevalent as we tend to believe it is. So it does not happen to all black high-achieving students. It happens to some of them. And when it happens to those students, it happens to them within particular context. So what we find is that those high-achieving students that are in diverse or predominantly white schools, when they are the only black student or one of one or two black students in those advanced courses, that's when that happens. We find in predominantly black schools, in fact, that high-achieving black students are actually more popular than their lower-achieving peers. So what we're learning is that there's something about that school context that creates an environment in which students begin to equate achievement with whiteness. Right? And so what we're really talking about is the tracking that happens in schools. So when you look at schools that are sometimes it's usually at least below 50% black, that you have just the one or two black students in the advanced classes, the AP in particular, that's when you tend to have this notion of what it means to be a high achiever is to act white. So again, it comes back to how do we address that in terms of changing the structure of tracking within schools so that we can get away from this image that presents achievement in this way. I wanted to pick up on this, go back to the pushing out. And I think that one of the things I want to really emphasize here is what we've been hearing, particularly from Principal Finn, is about what schools can do to help students stay in. And I think that that's not the typical conversation we usually hear. Typically, it's about there are all these problems that kids bring to school, low-income and minority kids bring to school, and there's really nothing we can do. But I think time and again, we do hear these stories of what schools are doing to help students, even who come from these backgrounds, like the young man that we saw who said, no one in my family, no one on my father's side has ever graduated, but that's something important to them and they want to do. So again, it's really about changing that conversation to once we begin to accept that there is something that schools can do to help students be successful, then we take on that challenge, figuring out what do we need to do, and as everyone here said, understanding what are the issues for children and how can we address those.
So, Superintendent Atkinson, what is happening at the state level to address the disparities now that we can see some of them, both from the classroom level, perceptions that are among students and perceptions among teachers and administrators, and how they, sort of bear out and play out in the statistics? What's happening at the state level to address that disparity?
One of the things that we're doing, bringing it to the attention of our local school districts, is that we have many more students who can be successful in advanced placement courses and other advanced courses than are enrolling in those classes. And that goes to the issue of having just one African-American or one Hispanic in an advanced placement course. We know that it is important to have more than one in a class.
Well, but my question is, how do you do that? How? I mean, we've all identified and recognized how important it is. So what does the state do to say, look, we can't just have one or two African-American students or Hispanic students. Clearly, there are more qualified. What's going on here? And then how does the state, from the superintendent's office, change what's happening so that on the ground we don't see these numbers anymore?
Number one, we have leadership academies for our principals. We want to bring this issue to the forefront that we have to graduate all of our students. And here are some rock stars who are doing it. Number two, we are working with professional development of teachers to make them more sensitive to the needs of all students.
All right, I believe we have another question.
I feel like one of the taboos in education is the issue of grading. And I think this is important because, just as we said, we know that kids who are in school who aren't truant are less likely to drop out. We also know that kids who have A's and B's are probably not going to drop out, right? Kids drop out once they start failing. You already pointed out the importance of helping them feel successful. But really, for most schools, grading is done on a reward-punishment paradigm, and it's not necessarily associated to learning. But that's a very tough thing to get teachers to change because it's something that they have direct control over. What can we do about that?
The concept of a formative assessment, is this really about proving something or improving everything? The way that we traditionally have tests since they launched Sputnik was that we're going to prove, do you know this or not? Well, how we have to approach it now is we're not proving anything, but we're going to improve on everything. We allow for our teachers to give very small assessments, 5-question assessments, same assessment in every single classroom for English 1, for example. And they've got to compare that data, and that not only grades their kids, but it grades them as well. Why did everyone get number 3 wrong in my class, but not in your class? What can I do differently? And allow the student to take that again until they master it. What it comes down to is that we're looking to see improvement. When we grade based on a formative assessment rather than just a summative, which there's room for that as well, we see kids get that success, get that momentum, and want to stay there as well.
Yeah, we have another question over here. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for the engaging dialogue. It's just very interesting. I'm Lori Barnes with the North Carolina Association for the Education of Young Children. And I'd wondered if any of you might speak to the importance of those very early years and what we can do to support those later efforts in those very early years that we have some influence over.
Jill Roush.
Yeah. Our center just recently completed probably the most comprehensive evaluation of Smart Start and More at Four, showing that indeed it adds tremendously to the value of communities. As the more communities do it, the better all the students do in those schools. Because the effects from those preschool programs not only affect the kids who get those programs, but they affect the kids who they sit next to in school. The other thing is that, we've had some improvement in our graduation rate. But, it's been a number of years since we started implementing More at Four, which is an evidence-based program that really works on early literacy. I believe that one of the reasons why we're starting to see a turnaround in our graduation rate is because about 12 years ago, we started doing a greater investment in early childhood education. I also believe, and this isn't always so popular to say, but if you look at how you measure risk, and risk is a word that a lot of people don't like to use, but if you look at the kinds of things that would predict how well should North Carolina's children do compared to children in other states. Now, depending on which measure you look at, our state, our children are pretty high on the risk scale in terms of parents' education, English as a second language, the things that normally predict how well kids do. Yet if you look at how North Carolina children do on the NEEP scores, which is the only way to compare states to each other, you'll find out that we come in usually 27th or 28th. That's below half. But when you consider that our children start out 43rd, 45th, I think there's a great deal of value added. And I think one of the reasons we have that in our state is because we've made the kind of investments in Smart Start and in More at Four. And those are really paying off.
I think we have time for one more quick question.
All right. My name is Cassio Noel. I wanted to give a perspective from
high school dropout. And I've just recently went back to get my GED through my program, OCL, and I'm one test away from obtaining my GED. So how do you hire people who identify more personally with the kids? Because, like, in high school, like, I went there to socialize. Like, it was a big social thing for me, you know. And my teachers, when they saw me, it wasn't, what do I do to further, you know, make you feel more comfortable in school, come to my class? It was, oh, what are you going to do today? You know, so.
Good question.
Sure. The principal thing, can you address that?
You know, I think, you know, and as you know, first of all, congratulations for getting that degree. I'm talking about good job. Good job. How do you build relationships? That's a question that someone might sit there with their test scores and with their degrees and say, well, I've got this, but how are you going to build relationships? What value can I get from you to build relationships with our kids? Something else we say is this: how do you inspire kids every day? How can you inspire one person every single day?
What does it cost us in terms of social cost when we lose a student and they end up perhaps in the criminal justice system or not thriving economically?
Yeah. I mean, the RAND Corporation has published studies where they try to estimate the economic damage to a community for a kid not finishing school. I don't remember what those numbers are, but they're pretty high. But all I can tell you that is one kid who goes into the criminal justice system and stays there, a career criminal, will cost the state around $4 or $5 million over the course of that kid's lifetime. So you don't have to go too far to see what a relatively small investment can do in a return.
You've been listening to a special broadcast of the State of Things called The American Graduate, Keeping Kids in School. Thanks to my co-host, Heather Burgess, and UNC-TV. Thanks also to our guests, June Atkinson, Todd Finn, Joel Rausch, and Carolyn Tyson. This program is part of WUNC's American Graduate Project. It's funded in part by a grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and through the contributions of WUNC listeners. That's the State of Things for today. Thanks for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.